Hey guys, welcome to the new campfire session of the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, where we will be sharing those stories that have shaped us into the haunters that we are today. As an extra added bonus, once a month, I will be inviting one of you subscribers on the show to share your stories with us. Please let me know if you like this new addition to the podcast by leaving a comment on Podbean or a review on iTunes. Thank you. Now let's roll into the next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com and the Sneak Tech Sneak Booth. Today we're going to have a little campfire session with the godfather of the Broadhead Brotherhood, and that's John Bingham. What's up, man?
Hey, man.
What's up, Johnny boy?
Yeah, it's just another day living the dream.
You look a little old and scruffy, man. What's up with this? Got some gray dirt on you. Got some gray dirt on your face.
So, what's the rules on cussing here? Because I'm going to say something back to you.
You can curse all you want, man.
I think I look distinguished, not old and scruffy.
Oh, man. So, some of the rifle deer hunts are going to be starting here pretty soon. You going to be doing any guiding for them, or?
We didn't have many rifle hunters sign up with us this year. So usually we start getting some signed up right about now. So we're hopeful that we can get those spots filled. We've been doing some scouting and I'm sure you've seen the recent trail cam pictures that we put up.
Yeah.
We've got some good bucks in there. And we have one buck in particular that he's always standing at an odd angle, so we can't tell, but it looks like he has a kicker coming off the back. And which, you know, is pretty unusual for a coos to be anything outside that regular, you know, mainframe thing. So he's going to be a special deer for somebody, hopefully for me. So
there you go. Nice. You got that unit?
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. My son does too. So it's gonna be a fun hunt. There's a lot of good bucks running around this year. The weather and the rain and everything has really helped them out. So
we hit it good this year.
Yeah.
Got the regular patterns like we used to get. Seemed a little like summer was the way it used to be, the way I remembered it when I first moved here. Like super hot, super intense, but not as long and dragged out. Like, right. You know, it's already kind of cooled off a little bit. I don't know. I feel like the last few years, shit, you get to like the end of October, you still got 100-degree weather. And it's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know? But the days weren't as hot, like, but there was more 100-degree days. And it felt like the rain patterns weren't coming. Like, I remember they used to always come in, you know, July, beginning of August. And then you might get a couple more come through, like, right at the beginning of September. But, that was typical. Now it seemed like, I don't know, just all over the place.
When I first went down there earlier, a couple months ago to set these cameras up, man, it was just green as can be down there. So lots and lots of forage for these animals and everything down there is just looking happy. And, nice. When we set up the cameras, you know, after a few weeks, I went back and checked them and we had a couple of bucks here and there. And then when I checked them on the second round, you know, we had 5, 6, 7 bucks coming in all together at one time. So,
oh, cool.
It's going to be a fun hunt.
Good. Good deal. So I have you on for a campfire, and basically I ask the same two things of everybody that's on this. I want you to share with us a story that maybe changed the way that you hunt now because you learned something on that hunt or an incident happened or, you know, something that kind of shaped you into John Bingham today. And then the second one, I want to hear about your most fun or your most outrageous, amazing hunt that you'll never forget. So why don't you give us that first one, or if you want to start with the other, it's fine with me either way.
Well, you know, I relate a lot of my hunting experience you know, as for Western hunting, you know, because in Texas, it was pretty, where I'm from, it was pretty straightforward. Sit in a blind, you know, blinds that we built that had been there for, you know, 20 years. We just right. fixed them up every year. So, I would say that the one thing that changed for me hunting out here was the first time I ever drew a tag in an area that I had never been in, didn't even know what the hell was going on. It was a mule deer tag, and that hunt almost made me not want to hunt in Arizona anymore.
Yeah, I get that.
Because it was insane, man. You know, we went out, we scouted, and obviously we scouted for a place to, you know, we put in as a group. So it was me and a handful of coworkers, and every one of us was, you know, not from here. So I'm not shitting you. We didn't know jack about hunting in Arizona. We just knew that you could draw a tag and that you can go to this area and, you know, just get after it. So that's what we intended to do. And what we didn't realize was this was in unit 23. So okay. at times,
good at the unit, time, though.
Yeah. Good unit for muleys. Now that I know better. But at the same, the whitetail season opened on the same weekend.
Mm.
So the road, you know, going into where we, you know, picked this really great camp spot was just trailer after trailer. One here, 100 yards up the road, there's another camp. There's another, yep. I mean,
it's a zoo.
Shit. There must have been a dozen camps on the way up to our spot. And the place was just a madhouse. It was four wheelers. And you know, I got up there and I was like, how the hell do people hunt up here? This is, you know, it doesn't feel right. It feels dangerous. You know, there's shots going around. You know? So, you know, when that hunt was over, I was pretty much convinced that, you know, Arizona wasn't the place for me to hunt. This is too crowded, too busy. But surprisingly enough, we saw deer the whole time,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's, you know, so we're, you know, of the one mind that, man, these deer are really, really stupid. And second, it's just too crowded to hunt here. So I learned a lot from that experience of, you know, looking closer at the hunts, reading the regs, looking at the, you know, the success rates.
Mm-hmm.
How many tags are given out? Learned a whole lot from that. And then once I figured out that it was probably just easier to go bow hunt with an over-the-counter tag, it got a lot better after that. And I'm glad that I didn't, you know, stick with my initial impression of never going Western hunting again. Because yeah. It's, you know, this hunting experience that I've had in the, you know, 14 years or so that I've been here, has been the best in my life. I've got to see some cool places, you know, parts of Arizona that you never knew existed. I got to see animals that I never saw, in the wild, until I moved out here, like, you know, black bears, you know, right. we don't have those where I'm from. Antelope, we don't have, you know, so, it's been exciting, profoundly, molding experience for me, and I'm glad that I didn't decide to, you know, say screw it and just get a lease in Texas and hunt there the rest of my life.
Right. Well, in Texas you can hunt everything.
Well,
you can hunt African game in Texas.
I know, right? It's super fun, you know. But I, you know, Texas is, you know, because it's so much privately owned land.
Yeah, it's expensive, you know, up there.
Yeah, for the regular guy, it's incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
I was really fortunate that I had a friend whose mother remarried into one of the richest construction company owners in San Antonio.
Wow. And
so he had a couple of ranches. So I got lucky in that aspect.
For sure.
Yeah.
How come you never invited me down to go to freaking Texas with you, bastard?
Yeah, you know.
I like to go shoot shit from a freaking
from a box blind once in a while. Why not?
Hey, what was that you told me about your spot here? You have the 5-year rule. We have to be your, we got to be friends for you're 5 years.
Well, I've known you longer than 5 years now.
Well, I think all those people went bankrupt since then. So there's probably no more ranches.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
But seriously, like Texas is fun. Like, and you could do some pretty Western shit over there. You can go hunt and do some real spot and stalk stuff. I remember, one of the first times I went there, I went to go hunt mouflon sheep down by, oh my God, I can't think of the name of it right now. Oh my God, it's going to bother me. It's a real famous place for going hunting too, in the south, like right by the border. It'll probably dawn on me afterwards. But anyway, we went down there and it's real broken up country. And there's not mountains, but there's like good sized ridges and stuff. And we did it as a spot and stalk hunt, you know. You know, it's not free range, obviously, but the actual ranch was 20,000 acres of high fence. So it's like, I mean, you don't even see the damn fence. You don't even know where the hell the fence is. That was fun. I mean, I busted my ass to get mine. It took me like 5 days and I was just like all over the place, just up and down, up and down, up and down. So there is some cool shit to be had over there. It's not just go sit over corn, you know.
Oh,
not
no.
Not everybody does it like that. And you go sheep hunting, Barbary sheep hunting. You know, you go West Texas or Panhandle or one of those. Yeah, they've got some pretty cool hunts.
Yeah, so. We had no shortage of game to chase after. Sounds like you're talking about the Del Rio area.
Del Rio, thank you. My God, it was like it was on the tip of my tongue. I've been there three times and I couldn't even think of it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No. The friend, mm-hmm. they had a ranch. They had a family ranch down that way between Uvalde and
Uvalde, yeah,
and Del Rio.
A lot of big whitetail over there.
Oh yeah, it's 25,000 acres. So you get it on a ranch that big, it doesn't matter if it's high fence or not. You'll never cross the same road twice.
Right.
In a couple of days, and man, what an amazing place.
I bet.
Just huge whitetails and just every game species that you can think of that's native to the United States.
You drive at nighttime down there by Del Rio and you got to drive in the middle of the road. You don't want to stay on either side. And there's like black buck access, sheep, you know, whitetail, freaking alligator. He's like anything you want. Yeah. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah. Armadillo too. You got to get
armadillos all over the place.
Yeah. If you don't have an armadillo jumping up into the bottom of your undercarriage, you haven't driven in Texas. So
yeah, no, that's pretty cool. So, you went from being a guy that, hunted in Texas to coming here thinking that hunting was, absolutely crazy to now you guide in Arizona. It's, you know, pretty big swing from one spectrum to the other. What was your most outrageous hunt or your most memorable hunt that you can think of?
I think I would be just pretty much like everybody else, and I'd have to say it was my very first hunt with my father.
Okay.
He was in the Border Patrol and Customs and Immigration for a really long time, and we lived down on the Texas border. I lived in just about every little town along that way, from, you know, Rio Grande City, Roma, Zapata. We lived in all those places. And him and my grandfather leased a ranch. Mm-hmm. Down that way, and if I recall, it wasn't very big. It was, you know, 400 or 500 acres, but just enough, you know, for the two of them to go out and shoot a deer. And I remember going out with both of them, and they built a box blind right on the spot, right where they wanted it to put it. You know, they brought their carpentry tools and they cut all the lumber at the house, and then they brought it out and they assembled it, and it was this box stand, you know, 5-6 feet off the ground, mm-hmm. and overlooking a little wash, you know. So, you know, I was out there helping as much as I could, you know, for I think it was probably 9 at the time. Mm-hmm. And so the next weekend, I remember going, you know, I still distinctly remember my father waking me up in the morning. He made me oatmeal and toast. You know, it's funny I can remember all this, but I can't remember your phone number. You know, yeah. So, and this is, you know, like 40 years ago. And just the whole thing, I remember being so excited. I had, you know, at that point, I didn't even – had never been hunting outside, you know, a random bird with my pellet gun in the backyard.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, we got out there, and I'm sitting in the box blind with my dad, and it was just, you know, just that whole experience. It's cold, it's quiet, and my feet are tapping and hitting the side of the blind, and my dad's repeatedly telling me to be quiet. And he brought me a thermos of hot chocolate, and I'm slurping on it like, you know, it's like some Frenchman with his cappuccino or something. They're like, you know, and I wasn't quite getting the concept of that hunt, of what I was supposed to be doing, but I was doing my best, you know. And then by some miracle of some unseen God, this 8-point or, you know, 4x4 whitetail shows up. And I remember my dad, he was like telling me to be quiet. He put the rifle up in the windowsill. And I remember just peeking over and seeing this buck just kind of standing there 100 yards out. And for whatever reason, I ducked down and I started giggling for I don't know why. And, you know, so, and my dad, you know, he's always been a crack shot, and dropped him right there. And, you know, I remember walking out there with him and gutting it, and then he drug it up to the blind and had to walk back to the truck. And I was there alone with the deer, and I was just sitting on it and looking at it and poking its eyes and uh-huh. know, just doing all this. I was just fascinated with the whole thing. And yeah, so if there's one hunt that sticks out, was, you know, hunting with my dad for the very first time. That was pretty cool.
That is cool. I don't know that I can remember exactly which one my first hunt was, because they kind of like feel like they all like blend together. But one of the most memorable hunts I ever had with my dad, we were in. Because my very first time I went with him was probably like, I was probably like 4. That's probably why I don't really remember it. So you were 9, you were already like older and had a concept. But
yeah, I had this scruff too. I was pretty distinguished. You
probably
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
The we went to Binghamton, New York, upstate New York, and my dad's friend. We called him Uncle Benny, but he's not really my uncle. Anyway, so he. Funny thing is, he's an ex mobster guy, you know, that got relocated up there from the witness protection program or something crazy like that. Just nuts. Guy's just like really like a character. He's got all this land up there, a big farm. We go up there, and it's shotgun only. And we go. The first morning we had out, had snowed. I don't know. There's probably about 6 inches of snow down on the ground. We're heading up. We're heading up in the mountains. And we have to cross this creek. And Uncle Benny was with us. We're walking across, and we're crossing this log. And Benny's helping me get across, and he falls into the creek. So he's soaking wet. He has to go back. So it's just me and my dad. We head up there, we head up through the woods, and, you know, back then the idea of hunting was go find a place to sit underneath a tree and wait for something to walk by, you know? It wasn't like, you know, they weren't like patterning them. They weren't even like, don't know, but my dad always had a knack for choosing a spot that was good for deer. Like, I mean, he stopped hunting a long time ago now. It's probably been 20, 25, maybe more years that he stopped hunting. But back then, like every year he would get one. And like nobody could understand why my dad would just had a thing for picking. So we set up on this right underneath these boulders and I'm freezing my ass off. And this deer shows up, this buck, a little 6-point buck, a little basket horn. And he's walking, and my dad's got the 35 lever action Marlin, which I still have. And you know, he's taking aim on it, and the buck finally stops in an open. He pulls the trigger, click, fuck, gun doesn't go off. Racks another one in, click. Like he's like, what the fuck's going on? Now the deer's heard the lever action go twice. You know, he was only 100 yards away. He bounds off. And the second shell won't come out now. And like, we don't know what the hell's going on, but my dad's like, all right, well, we might as well go back. We're going back. We get to this fence and we're going to cross the fence. And my dad's like, here, hold the gun, hold it straight up and down and hold it away from you like this, so I can get on the fence and then you hand it over to me. So he gets underneath the fence and he goes, and I'm just about to hand it, and the gun goes off.
Oh, shit.
Scared the fucking shit out of me. It almost ruined my hike. It's part of the reason why I started looking to bow hunting. Like, I became a bow hunter. I mean, I was already shooting a bow at that time. Like, my dad had bought me a little shitty bow. But I actually started wanting to hunt with him by the time I was 13. It was like one of the reasons why I was like, you know, I don't like guns. I still don't really love guns. I don't like loud noises. I don't like ringing ears, that kind of scarred me for a long time. And the shitty thing was, I started saying that it was like a curse at Uncle Benny's house, because a very similar thing happened with my dad's shotgun, which also I still use today. It's a Model 1100, and it, you know, never had a problem with the damn thing except for this one time. My Uncle Joe and I and my father, we were bird hunting at Uncle Benny's place. And freaking gun didn't go off, and the shell got jammed and went off in my Uncle Joe's hand like an hour later. You know, luckily he was pointing it, you know, in the right direction or whatever. It's just, it was crazy, crazy. So those like things, like kind of like they stuck in my mind, and I still have such a thing with firearms. And like my cousins, they walk around, you know, well, they used to anyway. They used to walk around with like it loaded, you know, and just have it on safety, because, you know, back then we used to jump shoot stuff and whatever. Like now, like I don't even have it chambered, nothing. I don't ever.
I'm pretty anal about that stuff too. it kind of reminds me of another story. It doesn't have to do with accidental discharge or anything like that. First, I'm going to say you probably shouldn't go back to Uncle Benny's house. You know,
I haven't been back in, Jesus, man, probably close to 30 years now.
So it's funny. On the same ranch that I, you know, told my story about, we used to, you know, some people would call it road hunting. Back then we didn't, you know, we didn't make it a distinguish, you know, if you're on the ranch doing it, it's acceptable. You know, if you've been to South Texas, you know the brush is incredibly thick. Mm-hmm. It's just high enough for you not to be able to see. But if you stand up in the back of a truck and drive on the roads, you can catch glimpses of deer in there. So what we do is, first I got to back up a little bit. So if you had ever been to my grandfather's house out in his garage, you would see all the antlers of all the deer, you know, all the skull caps of all the deer that he killed. And, you know, just, you can go from, you know, 1, 2, 3, And then right in the middle, there's a half of a styrofoam cup. Mm-hmm. And it's got, he drew this little 8-point buck and put my dad's name on it. And he nailed it up there. Right. So, you know, skip forward, or, you know, skip backward to the ranch. So we decided to camp out, and we were actually driving around looking for firewood. But, you know, so we're in the back of the truck. My dad is standing up there. It's drizzling. So he has his 243 with a scope, and he has that cup over it to keep the water off the scope. I'm back there with a 30-30 Winchester. I remember we had stopped to pick up an old fence post that was laying on the ground, threw it in the back of the truck. We both climbed in, and my grandfather was driving, and he started to creep forward. And the deal was, if you saw a deer, you know, you knock on the roof of the truck, and they had stopped. So we started rolling forward, and this deer just comes, this really nice buck just comes, and he sticks his nose out of the brush and then just walks right into the middle of the road. And I didn't have the wherewithal to lift my rifle and shoot it. So I'm telling my dad, shoot him. And my dad throws his gun up there, and I guess he forgot he had the cup on the scope. So he's like, what the hell? And then he just like took a snapshot, and then he threw the cup off, and, you know, and it was funnier than the way I'm telling it. So,
I can picture that.
that cup has been up there for probably 20 years or so. So
that's hilarious. Cool. Well, other than a couple of whitetail hunts or whatever, you got anything cool planned for the rest of the year or?
Well, I have my own tag, and my son's tag, down in that area. Also have a late season archery, elk.
Oh, nice. What year? Yeah,
23.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, that'll be a fun one. I'm not real super familiar with the area that I'm looking at. So, still trying to decide how I want to approach that. But I got about a month to figure it out.
Just find all the spots where you can glass.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my plan. Yeah. Just, you know,
23 is kind of hard for, or at least for elk, I think, and that for where the elk will be. But, I had that, my dad had that tag actually. It's one of the first times I made him put in, and he drew it, and I had to drag him out there tooth and nail, but, him and my father-in-law both drew it together, and we got on a couple of bulls. It's a tough hunt, but you can definitely do it.
Yeah. We've had a couple of close friends who've been up there during that time of the year, and they gave me some good information to work off of. So it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I honestly don't care if I see an elk at all. I'm in it for the whole picture.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously I want to kill one, but you know, if I don't, I don't, I'm not going to be terribly upset about it.
Yeah. Well, you want to see some though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I definitely want to see one. I don't be nonchalant about it and say, yeah, well, I don't give a shit, but you know, I do give a shit.
Yeah. No, I mean, if I don't fill a tag and there was a lot of action, you seen a lot of stuff, definitely much, much easier pill to swallow than going out there and just being like completely skunked.
Yeah.
You know, but, I'm sure you guys will get on something. Cool. Well, man, good deal. I'll probably see you down south and then late archery if you're still going to be, if you're running around with Billy, if you have a tag to fill anyway, because if you get one in your rifle season, you probably won't be down there. Or maybe
we have we're guiding some clients in January, okay. Couple of repeat clients, and we had some guys come out for a javelina hunt last year or this year earlier, and they saw so many deer out there, you know, after the season closed, you know, they're like, hey, we want to come back. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm cool. Really looking forward to it.
Good deal. Well, awesome, man. I'll let you go, get back to work, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, right on, man. I appreciate you having me.
Before I let you go, though, so tell me what's going on with Broadhead Brotherhood. You brought the page back in a different format. It's no longer really a group. You got your fan page thing going on. What's going on with that?
Well, actually, I did start the group back up.
Oh, you know what? That's right. I did because I joined it.
I did. Yeah, because I realized that, you know, Facebook has a new setup to where you can link your page to your group. Mm-hmm. And the thing I was realizing with the page is there's just not a whole lot of interaction.
Yeah, because you can't do anything unless you're paying for it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so somebody would post something on there, but, you know, maybe two or three people would see it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I stepped away from it before, it was, you know, just like I explained, it was for some personal, professional reasons.
Yeah.
That, you know, and I kind of enjoyed the time away a little bit, you know, I'm not going to lie. But then as I started thinking about it and everything, I really missed it. I missed the camaraderie. I missed all the good stuff of it.
Yeah.
And learned a few lessons on that. So, I just, you know, quietly brought it back. I didn't want to make a big fanfare about it. And I just wanted it to be the place that I originally intended it to be. Mm-hmm. And so I think a reset was good for it.
Yeah.
So we're off to the races again, with some very important lessons learned.
Yeah. I was going to say, now you can do all the things. Not that you didn't do things the right way, but you could do things the way you want to now, where before you kind of would just go with where everything was, you know, following the flow of things or whatever, and you can kind of control a little bit better because you know what you didn't like about the last group.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. And I don't want to take away anything from anybody who was in that group before. Just a ton and ton of good people. And you and I know perfectly well that on a Facebook page, it only takes one or two guys to come in there and fuck it up for everybody.
Yeah.
And unfortunately those guys get the most attention. So, I have a plan for, you know, if we start heading in that direction again.
Yeah.
So
just don't fucking let Ron Nixon on there. You'll be fine. Just playing Ron.
Ron.
Ron's a scapegoat for everything.
I know he is. Well, it's his fault for doing that mule deer t-shirt. That's why. So, but no, there's a lot of good people there. I think that's what I missed the most was, you know, outside of Facebook, I'm really not a social person. You know, I keep to myself. I stay disconnected from a lot
of
things. I'm very much a hermit, actually. If I could go off and be a mountain man and somehow be rich, I would do that. So, that's what I missed. You know, the hunting community has way more good people than bad.
Assholes.
Yeah. And that's the aspect I enjoy of it. I never want that group or that page to be, this is John Bingham deal. I'm really uncomfortable in the spotlight. If anybody's seen me try to speak at the Shoot for Hope, completely out of my element. I'm way louder on Facebook than I am in person. But I don't want the focus to be John Bingham. That's not what my intention is. I want it to be, the focus is us as hunters, as bow hunters, as conservationists, all in one place doing the same thing.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, man. Well, I'll let you go and, I'm sure I'll talk to you.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, shortly. All right.
Thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
See y'all later.
Bye.